Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
The key to winning big is using every little bit of knowledge to your advantage. At Odds Checker, we give you the edge. Better odds, better picks, and better offers to make you a better bettor. Why settle for less? Quickly compare the odds at every sportsbook to ensure that you're getting the best price to maximize your return. Visit us at www.oddschecker.com/US. Odds Checker. Sports betting smarter.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 17th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast that there is. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We actually have poker news, kind of, today, right? This is crazy.
It's like it's all Corona all the time. I mean, it's going to be a lot of Corona a lot of the time, but right. All Corona all the time. So we'll start with the good stuff, and then we'll work into the... the other stuff's not bad either, but...
Yeah.
We'll start with the non-Corona stuff and work into the Corona stuff. How's that?
Then we're working into some fun stuff.
All right, so poker pro Phil Gaffond, who had challenged anyone to a 25,000-hand online heads-up pot limit Omaha match, has completed an incredible comeback to avoid losing more than 1 million euros against his first challenger. Gaffond, an anonymous European pro who went by the handle VennyVitty93, agreed to the 20-40-euro match with a side bet of 200,000 euros if Gaffond lost or 100,000 euros if VennyVitty lost. From the beginning, VennyVitty dominated Gaffond until he asked for a break on February 11th, down 900,000 euros. Wow. After the break, Gaffond slowly chipped away until VennyVitty took a couple breaks himself. And ultimately, Gaffond won a pot big enough with 75 of the 25,000 hands remaining that he could fold his way to victory. I love the fact that he could fold his way to victory in a cash game. Never thought about that.
I love that you don't know how to pronounce his name still after all these years. It's Galfond, by the way. So I have a couple of things that I want to say. One, do you think that, I mean, I've never seen anybody do that. This is like the guy sitting on the bench to win the batting title the last game of the season. Yeah. Did he actually fold the last 75 hands?
The last 75 hands, he just folded.
He just folded. Wow, that's interesting.
Lines.
Yeah. I wonder if you got any crap for that.
Remember this from an EV standpoint. I mean, he was going to be out 200,000 euros on the side bet if he lost. So, and then he had to gain 100. So it was a 300,000 euro swing for winning the match.
Yeah.
So at that point, I mean, you do the math on the blinds, and it makes sense to fold and not take unnecessary risk, right?
Yeah. So, no, I know. It's just. I wonder if you got crap for it anyway. Come on, play. You know. Or whatever.
I mean, if there wasn't a side bet, I don't see any reason why you wouldn't.
Right. Especially when you're on a roll like that.
Or at least just playing more conservatively. But yeah, that's some serious money there that you had to lock up at that point. But. So, I mean, a couple of things about this. I mean, we never even talked about this challenge on the show. I don't know why I never put it on the notes. I guess maybe I didn't think anybody was going to take him up on it. but one, I think I'm trying to think of 25,000 hands. I mean, obviously this took 3 months at least with breaks. I can't even, if you don't do breaks, you just play 8 hours a day or something. I'm trying to figure out how long that would take. It seems like a long time. 25,000 hands seems like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I tried to figure out, like, when we would play online, if you were playing at a full table, you would play probably 50, 60 hands in an hour,
right?
Sometimes more. So I started extracting it, and I was like, wow, that's a lot. When you're playing heads up, you could probably play 100 hands an hour playing online, so it's automatically dealt so quickly, you know? So
yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's...
Maybe it wasn't that bad, yeah. It
wasn't as bad.
But then you got to think. I mean, I don't know. I mean, this was on Galfond's site,
right? Galfond. The stress is on the gal. I think it's Galfond.
Galfond's site. So I don't know whether they had a timer like, you know, you would normally have on PokerStars where you have to rush your decision. I would imagine if they did, they turn that off. You're playing 200, 400 heads up. I think you're going to allow the your challenger to have some thought time as well as you, right? So
yeah, you're playing every hand, so it does take longer probably than your standard just folding everything.
Yeah. So so yeah, definitely a journey, to say the least. So
I can tell you why the guy lost. It's pretty clear to me. I don't know if it's clear to anybody else, but you said his name was Veni Vidi 93, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure I mispronounced that as well.
No, no, but it's the Latin is Veni Vidi Vici, which means I came, I saw, I conquered. Okay. He doesn't have Vici in his name, which means he couldn't conquer him.
He just saw, he just came and saw.
He just came and saw, but he got his ass kicked. So, I mean, he should have rewritten that name before he got into this challenge. I came, I saw, and that's it. You know.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, I haven't played a lot of heads up. Obviously, I played the heads up championship at the A&M Worlds every year. That's really where I play most of my heads up. You know, unless I'm lucky to, get to the end of a tournament that doesn't chop. So,
right, which never happens.
Yeah, it very rarely does, right? So, but I don't think I've ever played heads up pot limit Omaha ever. I mean, I might have played some heads up limit Omaha matches in some of those tournaments, the final table, but that's a whole other level of complexity as well, too.
Oh yeah,
I think. Although, you know, I'm curious, actually, whether it's easier to play heads up than No Limit Hold'em. Because No Limit Hold'em, it's a lot more what I kind of call like the No Limit Deuce of Seven thing, where you're just kind of betting your opponent off the hand. Mm-hmm. Your actual things don't mean much, right? Because it's only two of you, and, you know, you could have bottom pair and have the best hand. So, whereas Omaha, you get a little bit more options there, maybe. I don't know.
It definitely seems... Well, to me, I don't know. I mean, Galfond's awesome, so and that this is his game. So, but it seems to me that the more cards, the harder the game. So, I would think this would be harder to do than regular Hold'em heads up. I don't know. It's a lot more can be represented. A lot more can get there.
Right. It's harder. I think harder to figure out where you are in the hand.
Yeah.
Because probably. More obviously, more likely the two of you are going to hit more flops than in No Limit. That's given, right? So, so now it's less of a question of bending with air as, you know, is your crap, my crap better than your crap, right? So, I don't know. Interesting. But now I kind of feel like playing Omaha. So,
I got to ask, how do you take a couple of breaks?
Yeah, so, here's the other thing I wondered. I need to go back and read more, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners probably know more about this whole match than we obviously do. But I'm sure that it was probably written into the agreement that, you know, you could call for a break or two or however, I don't know. Because if it wasn't, then I got to think, you know, if I got you down 900,000 euros, this isn't a gentleman's game, right? I'm playing for blood, right? So why would I ever want to give you a break at that point and let you take some time and study and come back fresh, right? I mean, I got my...
Yeah, had to be in the... Even though it's written here that he asked for a break on February 11th, I would assume that he's just saying, okay, I need to take a break because it's part of the agreement. You can't just expect him to constantly be there and play. You know, there might be some reason for it. So, but then even Veni Vidi took a couple. The question I have was a couple of breaks. I don't understand that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know what the deal was, but
it must have been time restricted or something. It must have said, okay, you can take a break for a week, and then when the week was over, he said, I need to take another break. So let me go 2 weeks in a row, or let me continue this break. But it just seemed weird. A couple of breaks. It's like they doesn't make any sense. Like you're already on break. You're not. But maybe it was time. You know, there's a time limit to each one. So. But it is impressive to come back from 900,000 down and to win, and then to win the 100 grand after that, too, for winning. That's insane when you think about it, because the buy-in was like 20,000.
Yeah, 25,000, something like that, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're down 900, and when you're down 900, you can only buy in for 20 at a time to... Right, you can't
that I don't know, too. I don't know if that was the minimum, the maximum buy-in at that point, or whether you could just... there's a lot.
You have to, right? Because otherwise, it's not really a comeback. He could just put 900 euro in, win one hand, and be ahead. So he must have to.
Yeah, rally. That's a good point. That's a good
point. Wow, that's an amazing comeback to me. I think that's great.
Yeah,
we'll find out who this guy is eventually.
Yeah, we will.
Pay attention hard enough.
All right, all eight retirees in a regular Florida home poker game have contracted coronavirus, with three of them dying from it. The group last played together on March 21st, with one player reportedly coughing and sneezing throughout the game. The three who have died were all 84 years or older with pre-existing conditions. So not as drastic as it would be in a general sense, but pretty good reminder that live poker is probably not what you should be doing right now.
Yeah. I read the whole article, and they said this was a little before everyone would start going crazy with the stay at home and all that. So they weren't exactly smart about it, but they didn't really understand it or whatever. And they figured they were probably all, you know, living together or living near each other or whatever, and didn't realize what they were doing. But it is a serious thing. And I mean, the other thing too is, imagine if you're the person who gave it to everybody, because you were the one that was coughing and sneezing, or because it's one player.
That, but it certainly, I mean, they made a mention of that. So yeah, if I'm looking for a suspect in the game of Clue, I'm starting with that guy.
Exactly. Right? And can you imagine how that person feels if they survive and three of them died? I mean, I know they have pre-existings and they're in their 80s, and one was a married couple. They both died, right?
Yeah.
Is that
right? One was 94 too. Yeah. So again, I mean, all the compassion in the world for anybody that dies at some time, but it is a little easier when you've lived a long and full life to, rather if this is a game of 20-year-olds playing. But so much about this. I mean, it was interesting that how many poker rooms stayed open later than this. I mean, because I think a lot of us kind of realized at that point that, you know, we all love the game, right? But it's not the most sanitary place to be. And, you know, if you've got decent immune systems like I do, or you do on a lesser scale.
No, I have none. So we're the perfect average. You have a fantastic one. I have none. Together, we're right in the middle.
I generally don't worry about it, because I go and I, you know, I'm obviously wash my hands as much as I can and blah, blah, blah. And I know that, you know, I don't normally get sick, so my natural antibodies are good, but when I see some folks that don't look that way, and you know, they're touching the chips and cards and eating chicken wings and licking their fingers, and the number of people I see at casinos that don't wash their hands when they leave the john, you know, it's not a fun place for that kind of stuff. So now obviously we're talking a home game here, where these people have probably got, I think it's a weekly game is what it said, so they've been getting together probably for years, right?
Yeah.
So a little bit more sanitary there than the casino environment, but you're still touching chips and cards. And so, and of course, and then it's just so, I mean, it's weird, little segue, but I'm like, it's really weird to look back a month ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because so much has changed since this last month, right? I mean, I'm thinking back, March 16th, it was the day before St. Patrick's Day. The bars were still open. They were ordered closed the next day. So people were still out, you know, packing bars month ago.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, so then 4 days after the bars closed, which generally is kind of the, oh my God, this is kind of serious thing, this group decided to get together and play poker. So, but, you know, our local group here, they were trying to get a game together after that. Of course, I had no interest in that, but so I mean, again, every day this thing has gotten, we've got a little bit more clear on it, so this looks a lot scarier than it does, because it's April 16th we're looking back on it, right? But if we were talking about this story on March 21st, we probably wouldn't be as dire about it, right?
Well, I was gonna say that I feel foolish about the stuff that I had said on the show a month ago, talking about the World Series, saying, they just won't travel from, you know, Europe or China to play, but we'll be able to drive there and play. And I'm like, not realizing they're going to shut the whole thing down, you know, like they still haven't postponed the World Series, which is remarkable, or canceled. and we'll have that on the show again someday, I'm sure. But to me, I just couldn't believe, like, even our publisher's column that we had written, you know, I can't remember. Was it in the issue we didn't publish, or was it in the issue before that? I think it was in the issue before that. And we talked about how they have the flu. People, you know, more people die from the flu in America than have died from this at the time.
Yeah.
And we're like, so, you know, be safe out there. Still wash your hands and everything, but, you know, don't freak out either. But we're like, yeah, nah, it's okay to freak out now, you know? It's like you wish, it's, once it's in print, you can't take it back other than running a correction, but you're not running a correction on this. It's just how, at the time, how we were
but
informed.
Even again, I don't think I'd run a correction even if I could. I mean, part of this is what's fascinating about this is just how much we've learned in such a short time. So, yeah, you go back and listen to that show or read that magazine, you're going to think we're idiots, but everybody was an idiot.
Yeah, at the time, exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, there might have been a couple of people that were sounding alarm a little more vocal than the rest of them, but, you know, there was an interesting video somebody posted yesterday. It was a humorous one. This woman, in January, and her herself in April came to talk to her. She's like, you know, you should get a dog. And she's like, I don't have time for a dog. I got a lot of travel coming up. And then she just started laughing at her. But to think about, yeah, right. So, I mean, again, I'm like, and the whole interview was that way. It was like really funny to think about just how much we didn't know. And that was 3 months ago. I mean, now we're talking even a month ago, we didn't know. So,
yeah.
That being said, I think if we take a teleport us back to March 21st, if I heard a bunch of old people were playing poker and one was coughing and sneezing, I think at that point I might have raised a hand and said,
yeah.
But, you know, here's the other thing, too. I mean, because I've been talking to a couple friends that, you know, and how you deal with your elderly parents through this whole thing, right? Because it's difficult because you shouldn't be going to see them. I haven't seen my parents since it started.
Mine either.
You know, my mom's got all kinds of conditions. So, you know, the last thing I want to do is be the one that kills my mom, right? So.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's difficult not seeing them, right? But it's also difficult controlling them too, right? So I had a friend talk about it. You know, how do I get my dad not to go to the post office every day? Like, you know, there's ways he can get mail delivered to him and pay his bills online and stuff. I can help him with this, but he insists on going to the post office. So I think to some degree, you know, when you're 80-some and you have that poker game, you know, that's what you do, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, danger be damned. And that's probably part of the problem that we're having now is probably too many people saying danger be damned. And it's weird, too, because we were on this like boomerang thing, I think, right? Where I think everybody's like, all right, we get it. We're good now for the next 2 weeks. I mean, we'll be good. And then as it gets now to this time and we start getting stir crazy at home.
Yeah,
I think you're going to see a couple more people acting out. So I don't know. Hopefully this is the most depressing item we will have on the show about the coronavirus. I really hope, but
yeah.
Who knows? I mean, God, we could be on May 16th. We could go back and can you imagine? Remember what we were talking about on April 16th?
I hope not. I hope on May 16th we're like,
what were we thinking?
We're like, hey, remember back then it was the height of it? We were right. It's the height of it. We're good now. We're happy.
How could they not know coronavirus is spread through podcasts?
Don't even say that, dude.
Oh, I know. it's that's what's how scary weird this is.
Yeah,
how much changes and how much we don't know how much we don't know at this point.
Yeah.
It's mind boggling with the advancements we have in the world now that something like this could just whatever. But, all right, let's make this a little bit happier here. In just a few hours, if you're listening on Thursday. When we post the show here, some of golf's biggest stars, including Michelle Wee and John Daly, will play a virtual poker tournament to raise money for an employee fund set up to benefit MGM Mirage casino employees affected by the COVID-19 crisis. If you're listening to the show in time, you can tune in at twitch.tv/allstarpass or youtube.com/allstarpass and make real-time donations and get shout-outs from some of the players. That's pretty cool. And last Saturday, Ben Affleck held a virtual poker tournament with 45 of the biggest celebrities, including Tom Brady, John Hamm, and Bryan Cranston, with all the buy-ins going to Feeding America. That's the organization Feeding America, not just the general words Feeding America. Mm-hmm. Poker pro Ebony Kenny won the event, which raised more than $2 million.
She's local to us. She was in
Florida.
Down in South Florida. Yep, great player.
She's Vegas now, but yeah.
Well, she was. She's
got her
great
teeth
player.
Down here. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Yep.
Very good. Did we talk about the Ben Affleck tournament last week?
No, because
I read about it then.
Yeah. I didn't have enough information about it to put on the show last week. So
okay. All right.
It happened, and here it is. And, you know, $2 million to help feed people. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great.
But so it's interesting that it's like, you know, it's golf, and they decided to do a virtual poker tournament.
Yeah. Well, can't do a virtual golf tournament, I don't think.
I mean, I guess you could do a Golden Tee tournament or something.
I mean, how do you do that?
John Daly character on there.
I guess.
I mean, NASCAR people are driving cars on, you know, cartoon cars now. So.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's great that they're, I mean, I'm not criticizing. It's just, it's interesting that, because again, poker is not that exciting to watch online. I mean, I don't, but I mean, I guess at this point we're watching anything, right? I mean,
hey, we used to watch that Celebrity Poker Showdown crap when they were absolutely horrendous,
yeah, that was
and we watched
it. Day,
though. Well, it's a new day, Scott. It's a new day.
It is. Is it really? Is it? What is the day today? I don't know what the day is anymore.
What was that meme on Facebook about? Like, there's all new ways to name the days of the week now. It's like this day, that day, the other day, today, and the next day, or something. There's no like days of the week anymore because it doesn't make any difference.
My favorite was today is National Wear Your Pajamas to Work Day, and that was a real thing before this.
So. That's pretty funny.
Everybody's like, should that mean I shouldn't wear pajamas today for the first time? But I'm sure we'll have more charity events come up. So yeah, well, regardless of whether it's exciting to watch or not, but I do like the hey, you make a donation and Michelle Wee will say, hey, Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Might get me to bite, but probably not golf. I don't know too many golfers, but you know, get some rock stars to do this.
I met John Daly once when I was still working for a sports department. I went and covered a golf tournament and met him. He was pretty cool.
He always seemed like he'd be an interesting guy. He'd be somebody that I'd put in my quarantine house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that.
Look at the segue.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I'm serious. I would put him in my... I think he would be.
That guy's got definitely some stories to tell.
Did you out-color your pants with him?
No.
I think that'd be the ultimate show up, right? Hey, John Daly, I'm a big fan. And he looks down, and I'm like, oh, my God, you've got 400 colors on your pants. So offensive.
Oh, man.
I'm like, no, dude, I'm just a big fan.
Just a big fan. That's all there is.
All right. One of the most popular social media items being spread during social isolation is the Who Is In Your Quarantine House, featuring a number of houses with various celebrities and asking you which one you choose. And, of course, it didn't take long for a poker one to develop. So here we'll go through some of these houses and see which one we're going to be in. And we didn't talk about this, but I think as we're going through it, why don't we think about which house the other one of us would be in? That might be fun as well, too.
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, no.
Guess what house I'm going to be in?
Well, I didn't give that any thought.
Well, either have I. I just came up with it. So.
Oh, man. So, all right.
So, we both have the same level of thought on this, which is none. All right, here we go. If you're somewhere at home where you can write them down, you might want to write these down. But if I was on my Mega Scott Talk show with my new software, I could put this on the screen and people could read it.
Oh, man. Stop telling me about all the cheating you're doing on me. You're rubbing
all right,
me.
House number one, Daniel Negreanu, Tony G, Maria Ho, Eric Seidel, Alan Kessler, and Jeff Gross.
Okay.
House number two, Antonio Esfandiari, Jason Somerville, Sean Deeb, Sammy Farha, Jamie Gold, and Jennifer Tilly. House number three, Phil Hellmuth, Jason Mercier, Chris Moneymaker, Greg Raymer, Kristen Bicknell, Doyle Brunson. House number four, Mike Sexton, Johnny Chan, Jamie Kerstetter, Jean-Robert Blanc. Look, I tried to roll right into the Blanc part.
Don't call him Bobby. Only his friends can call him Bobby.
Billy Baxter and William Kassoff. House number five, Phil Ivey, Joe Hashem, TJ Cloutier, Liv Boré, Phil Leck, and John Juwanda. And house number six, Mike Matisau, Jen Harmon, Luke Schwartz, Randall Emmett, Vanessa Selps, and Mike McDonald.
Wow. So I can tell already that they tried to put someone on here who is as annoying as hell.
Well,
in
that's
each house,
kind of
right?
The idea.
And that's the idea, is to see which one you can survive in.
Put a couple cool people on there that you would love to hang out, and then there's always going to be one jerk in there that's going to make you go, gah!
Yeah, or two.
Can I deal with that person or two or three of them?
There are a couple
in order
of,
to hang out with the other people that are cool, right?
Quite a few of these are people that I don't know who they are. So, I mean,
yeah, actually, I know more than I thought, but there are some, and unfortunately, a couple in a house. So that's like house six. I've got three people there. I have no idea who they are. So,
yeah, exactly. So
one of the person I do know, I don't like. So
I know I won't pick house six for you.
Yeah,
because you don't know anybody.
I just made that easy for you, right?
Yeah. All right, so I'll pick your house, and you pick my house, and then we'll reveal who our houses are.
Okay, hold on. Take a real quick look here, make sure, figure out what house I think you might pick. All right. I have it in my mind.
All right. I think that you would probably go with house 5. I think that you know everybody on this list. Although you don't really know Liv Bory, you know of her.
Of her.
But we've met Joe Hashem together in Vegas. Phil Ivey, of course, you'd have so much to talk about with him. TJ, we can be like, hey, remember the cruise we took together? And
remember cruises?
remember cruises back when they happened and you went and played craps like we knew you would? So, and then, of course, there Ivy and Juwanda were part of the original pack there. They had that original Young Guns thing going. So there's a cool conversation there. And, of course, Phil Locke will drive you crazy but make you laugh your butt off. So I think there's enough there for you to be interested in. Plus, there is some history there with at least two of the players. I think you might go with – I thought about House 4 because Sexton's from Ohio and you guys want – but I think there's too many on there that you either don't know or would drive you crazy. So I'm going to go with House 5 for you and say it's Phil Ivey, Joe Hashem, TJ Cloutier, Liv Bory, Phil Locke, and John Juwanda.
Oh, hold on here just a minute. I've got a special treat for you for this that I didn't even think about.
Oh, no.
But I just found it.
Did I guess right?
This is the original Anti-Up Bell.
It's the original Anti-Up Bell from the freaking office?
And you answered correct. Imagine that.
Holy cow. And I did that like on just a whim. That was crazy. That bell is awesome. Hey, you know, if we need to raise money for the company, we could probably put that on eBay and tell all of our listeners, hey, go buy it. Someone can own the bell. Authentic, you know, souvenir from
Andy. So the funny thing about the bell is that it's been in, like, my desk drawer since I've had the desk drawer, right?
Yeah.
And a couple months ago, back in real world times, my wife, Charity, was running the beer truck, and she's like, do you have a bell or something we can use so when people tip us, we can ring it? And I'm like, I do have a bell, and I gave her the Annie Up bell, and then for like months, or not months, probably weeks, I just had the empty box sitting on my desk, and I started like heaving and stuff. I'm like, oh my God, what happened to the Annie Up bell? He said, don't worry, I have it in my purse. And so it's finally been returned to its rightful place there, and I was able to pull it out to celebrate your amazing
I can't believe it. Remind me to give you crap when the show's over about using the bell without my permission. So I'm a little confused now that I've guessed your house. It's going to be anticlimactic when you talk about it,
I guess it depends on how you look at it. Right. It's anticlimactic because you mentioned a lot of the reasons I would say, but it's kind of cool that you mentioned some of the reasons I was going to say.
See how well I know you, Scott. You think I ignore you, but I don't.
Here's the thing. I don't see a dark spot in this house. Every other house, there's somebody here that I just can't deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, supposing that Phil Locke is supposed to be the dark one in this house, or depending on your anger over edge sorting, Phil Ivey maybe, but
or again, you don't want to be so annoyed that somebody keeps borrowing money from you, TJ Cloutier.
So I guess, I mean, it's an interesting house because there are little problems with, like, more people in this house, but no big problems in my mind, right?
Right.
So that was part of it. But, I mean, Phil Ivey, I mean, I don't know how long quarantine's going to last, but, you know, if I can get 5 words out of him, that's 5 more than I've ever gotten out of him.
That's right.
But it'd be fun to watch him play. Joe Hashem's a cool dude. Always like him. TJ obviously has his problems, but I really did enjoy his stories on the cruise.
Yep.
And he did make sure the craps dealer paid me off on a bet that I missed. So still thank him for that. You're right, I don't know Liv, but I'm intrigued enough that I think she would be very interesting to share a house with. John Juwanda, again, not the big conversationalist, but I think he'd be fun enough and certainly a fantastic player. And then Phil Locke, I've always liked Phil. I've never been annoyed by Phil Locke. I guess maybe I'm supposed to be on this list, but I always thought he was fun to watch on TV. So,
yeah,
it was a pretty easy house for me. I am not as decisive on your house, unfortunately.
Okay.
I've got 3 in mind.
Wow.
3 in mind.
All right.
Let me try to narrow it down here. Oh, boy. And if I don't get it, I'm gonna write down a piece of paper so I know the order I had it in, just so people tell me I didn't. So when I say, oh, that was my second choice, I'm not lying to you.
This always makes for good radio, listening to you think.
I'm going to go with house number one.
You cannot ring the bell.
All right, okay. Let me try it again. House number four.
You cannot ring the bell.
Oh, boy. So the last one I wrote down is house number three.
You cannot ring the bell. What is wrong with you?
The only other one I could think of is house number six, just because Jen Hartman's there. But tell me it's not house number six.
No, it's not house number six. It's house number two.
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah, house number two. Here's why.
The problem with house number two, you and Sean D were getting in a fist fight in the first minute.
That's the whole reason. I want to be in there with Sean D and just be merciless on him until he pays me my $50. And then on top of it, I mean, first of all, who are the two coolest guys in poker? Seriously. Sammy Farha and Antonio Esfandiari. Okay?
They're, I disagree on that. They are interesting folks. But
now,
yes.
All right. So if you go down the list for me, Antonio, one, we've met him and talked to him before. Two,
he'd be fun. Absolutely.
He's hilarious, remarkable. Three, my now deceased father-in-law was a world-famous magician.
Right.
So we would totally have all of that to talk about.
Sure.
Plus, he's just so cool and funny. So that right there alone, I want to be in the house with him. Jason Somerville, culturally, I would love to hang out with him. Great guy.
I would just like to pick his brain. He's really one of the creators, quote unquote, creators in the poker world.
That's what I'm saying.
He's holding it up and that kind of stuff. I mean, and he's done a really good job with that. So,
the other thing was, like, you know, Sean D. I thought Sean D. when we met him and hung out with him in Chicago was funny, and I thought he's a good guy, and I just would love to tease him about that. Sammy Farha, for obvious reasons. I mean, if anyone needs fashion advice, it's me. Right, I would love to have Sammy Farha just dress me up in clothes and shit, you know, whatever.
I think it'd be interesting to have Sammy and Chris Moneymaker in the same house.
Yeah, I thought that would be interesting too.
But yeah.
Jamie Gold. Now, of course, I'm sure that Jamie and or Jennifer Tilly are one of the ones that people would think are annoying. But see, now we have an edge with Jamie Gold though, because one, we had a business relationship with him.
Yeah, I was gonna say I actually got to know him, and I think
he was a pretty good guy.
I think a lot of the criticism of him was unfounded.
Exactly.
I enjoyed hanging out with the dude.
So I don't think he's annoying.
He certainly was the dark spot on that house for me.
Plus, his mom was on one of our poker cruises, and I hung out with her all week. Yeah, so I could totally use that, you know, and say, hey, dude, you know, you better cut it out or I'll tell your mom. So, I mean, I got him under control. And then, of course, Jen Tilly. I can think of a couple of reasons why I'd want her around.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And plus the fact that Phil Locke, Antonio, and Jennifer Tilly were like the three amigos.
Oh,
so
yeah,
those two would be getting into it.
Yeah. And Antonio in there. Right?
And that just seemed like a really fun house to me. All the other houses, when I looked at them, I agree with you, had people on there that I just couldn't be around. I'm not going to say who they are, but there were people on the list that I thought, oh. And then there were some on the list I thought, I don't know who you are. So that really, unless I just want to try to flex my social, you know.
Hi, I'm Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris. I got to get to know you now. I have no idea who you are.
I know all about poker, and I don't know who you are.
You know, exactly. So I'd feel embarrassed. But the other guys, like, the house that I picked for you was my backup house, Phil Ivey.
Oh, really? Boy, I was way off on you then. Jeez.
Yeah. I mean, I love Negreanu. I hung out with him at the Vince LeCavalier thing that time, and we've met him in other situations, had him on the show. Tony G, we had dinner with, and he was a business partner with us for a long time. Maria Ho, I met once. Eric Seidel, I didn't meet, but I could totally make fun of you with him about the amount of people who show up at tournaments. Alan Kessler, I mean, he's kind of annoying. He annoys us all the time. But I don't know who Jeff Gross is, to be honest with you, that I would do anything with him. So now, Phil Hellmuth's house, I mean, that seemed like a real stressful house to me. I don't know
That's
why.
That's a good way of describing it, isn't it? Yep, I couldn't really place my finger on it. I mean, there's some folks in there that I would really like hanging out with. But there was just something about that house.
Yeah, that house just seemed like I was going to be upset. Mattisau's house. I didn't know three people on that list.
Yeah.
I've met Vanessa Selps and I've interviewed her. Jennifer Harmon was one of my favorites of all time. Mattisau, we had fun with. We had a blast with. We even recorded him taking a pee. So there'd be some fun moments there. And those two got along, you know, Mattisau and Harmon. So, but there wasn't enough people there to interest me. So right. Six couldn't be it.
Totally agree.
Yep. Five was, like I said, was great. Before, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like Johnny Chan. Mike Sexton, I didn't really take a shine to. Kerstetter, I don't really know. I put her in the magazine a lot of times for all her success and stuff, but I don't know her. Bobby Ballon was, you know, like I said, a jerk to me. Billy Baxter, I didn't know. I know who he is. Obviously, he's all responsible for there being professional poker players, getting IRS and all that. But and then William Kasoff, I don't know at all. So I know the name, but I don't know the person. So
yeah.
Really, you broil it down.
Four is probably going to be my backup house, to be honest. So
yeah, I was thinking
Kasoff is the big fly in the ointment there. It's a pretty big fly in the ointment there. But
yeah, that's the guy who started all the trouble at the table that time, right?
Yeah.
I don't know him, so I mean, I don't know him either. So that could have been just some blip on, you know, because same thing with Helmuth. People say when you meet him outside of poker, he's this great, cuddly, you know, teddy bear or whatever. So I interviewed him once that time when he was going to the Hall of Fame, and, you know, it was fun to talk to him. And Jason Mercier, we had him on our cover early on, and he had a lot of nice things to say about us, moneymaker or whatever. But it was tough. It was tough. For me, I enjoyed it. I knew this was coming up, and I gave it some thought, but it seemed like when I started canceling everything out, House two is definitely it. You thought it was my last house you were going to pick for me.
Yeah. Well, mostly just because of Sean D. I didn't do the reverse psychology that you would want to be in that house just so you could get him. I was doing the other way that he wouldn't want to be in the house with him. So.
All right. Annie updates. Jonesing for a poker game during the coronavirus? Rediscover Papes, the Annie Up fans online play money tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site. Available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/papes. That's PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines, with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. Buy-in for each tournament is 20,000 chips, and PokerStars gives you 15,000 in play chips every 4 hours, so you need to play a little on your own each week in order to be able to buy in to both tournaments. Of course, you could just win one, and then you'd be set for the rest of the season.
Yep.
Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands or call the four questions or just discuss anything poker. You can also check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at annieupmagazine.com/shop. Check out t-shirts and hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and much more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up Pokercast, or Annie Up Poker Tour logos. And, of course, we love hearing from our fans, so if you somehow have a hand of the week or you want a listener spotlight, talk to us or call the floor submission that you remember from the past, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or post at Annie Up Fans Group on Facebook.
We're starting to get Papes hands, so people
yeah,
are playing.
That's
so
cool. Hands are hands.
You're not going to even call the floors on Papes, but you will get hands. So,
well, what's that famous Hillary Clinton thing on women's rights or human rights or whatever? So, play hands are real hands, so send them in. O'Malley's got a new move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing a $1, $2 mix of PLO and No Limit Hold'em at one of our regular home games. The table is split evenly, with half of us at least somewhat familiar with the strategy of PLO and the other half not. We bought in for $200 and currently sit with $300. The game is six-handed. We're in the PLO round, and we're playing high only. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and we're in the hijack with the ace of spades, queen of hearts, jack of hearts, tray of spades. This is a decent hand, but since we're not playing eight or better, I'm not too crazy about the tray. We limp. The cutoff folds, the button calls. This player is new to the game of PLO. In fact, he's so new, we have to keep reminding him that he has to play two cards from his hand and three on the board. He bought in for $200 and busted, but has recently rebought and currently sits with around a starting stack. The small blind completes and the big blind checks. There's $8 in the pot, and the flop is the king of hearts, tray of diamonds, tray of clubs. This is a pretty decent flop. I think in this game, if anyone had kings pre-flop, they would have let us know. The small blind and big blind both check, and we make a pot-sized bet. The button calls, but the blinds fold. There's $24 in the pot, and the turn is the ace of clubs. So, we've filled up. We decide to make a bet of $20 into the pot. Our opponent thinks for a while before raising us another $20. Could this be ace-king? We make the call, and with $104 in the pot, the river is the king of spades. We decide to slow down and check. Our opponent bets $60 into the pot, leaving himself around 90 behind. So, what's the move?
Well, I lost track of where I am. Here I am. All right, sign with the AdvancedPokerTrain.com, hand of the week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. And we're going to continue to blow through our backlog of Vic G hands, Chris.
Yeah, we need to.
We got two left, so we got two more after that, then Vic G's going to have to find a way to play poker again and send some in. So, all right, here's this week's. Again, all these, this is all from that time that he was at Biloxi during the $1 million heater playing 1-3 no limit. Right. So, this hand, he says he's starting with, again, it's 1-3 no limit. We start the hand with $500. And again, opening raises of $12 to $18 are not uncommon. The villain in this hand is under the gun, sits around $400. Sits with around $400. He's one of the newer players to join the table. He's in his late 50s, early 60s. He's wearing a black Aria logo jacket. Boy, Phil Hellmuth has aged. has not played many pots yet and is absentmindedly performing the more difficult chip spins and tricks in his hands while studying the table. He hasn't said a word since joining us and hasn't opened any pots. All right. This hand, he opens from under the gun for $21, and it's folded around to us on the button with a two of spades, two of clubs, also known as the deuce of spades, deuce of clubs.
So you said we're on the button, right?
Yep.
Well, this is one of those things where, you know, it helps to just be... He's got a lot of details on this guy, so... he's obviously really cognizant of people and how they play and what their abilities are and what they can do. So he's just one of those situations where I'm just playing the person and playing the flop and playing what they're and engaging how they're acting with every street or with every nuance. So the two deuce, whatever you want to call it, the ducks, whatever, quack, quack, those things don't really matter to me. If I'm in position and I think I can outplay this guy or if I think I got a bead on him somehow, then yes, I'm going to call the money, be in position. If I happen to flop a set or some obscure flop comes like 4-3-8 or something, you know, where I think he has ace-king or, you know, I might outplay him and not even worry about the deuces and have showdown value later if, in case it gets to one of those, you know, bullying kind of situations. But in this situation, I don't really care what my hand is, but it'd be nice to hit it. So if it seems like I'm going to be heads up with him, like the blinds are kind of skittish and don't want to call raises and things like that, I'm just going to call. If I feel like he's the type of guy that would back down to a raise, you know, a re-raise, and then the other people obviously get out of the way because they're in the blinds, I might do that. But in this case, I feel like a call is warranted, and I just might want to outplay him afterward.
Yeah, definitely. We don't have any experience playing with him. We obviously have our visual assessment of him, but yeah, we haven't played with him yet, right? So... So at that point, I am always going to give folks the benefit of the doubt, and if you're raising from under the gun, then I'm going to assume you have a pretty good hand. So therefore, I don't feel like raising here. We have plenty of chips to play with. This is a good hand to bust a big hand. And if the blinds come along too, then that just means more money for my set mining. So I'm not worried about them coming in. So I'm not trying to fold them out of this hand. So to me, this is an easy call. So.
Okay, I agree with you.
All right. Here it says, I would like to play a hand with this villain. He looks to intimidate the table with his tricks, jacket, and stone cold silent treatment, and flopping a set might put a crack in his persona. We call this $21, and our heads up to the flop. Let's go set mining.
Okay.
$40 in the pot. I'm sorry, the blinds did fold, right?
Yeah.
Mention that. Yeah. With $40 in the pot, after the rake, we see a flop of four of diamonds, tray of clubs, 10 of hearts.
Wow.
He says, not exactly a flop we're looking for, but we do have backdoor straight possibilities. Our villain makes a bet of $25 into the $40 pot.
Wow. I said 4-3-8, I think, just joking around. That was crazy. I don't dislike this flop, to be honest with you. If this guy doesn't have a made hand pre-flop, and he's just C-betting right now, I mean, unless it's ace-10, he didn't raise a 4-4 or 3-3, and if he had 10-10, he's probably checking to see if he'll try to steal it. You know, I mean, I don't dislike this flop that much. I might even consider raising here and just taking it down, and if he comes over the top, then I wouldn't waste this money later. I know you could just call and try to still turn your set, but I don't dislike this, especially, you know, something can count like a five on the turn or an ace, you know.
Yep.
Ace would suck because he might bet us off the draw, but I don't dislike this. I can go either way with it. I can go with a raise or I can go with a call if I'm feeling – if I get any kind of like, hey, this guy's really got it, then, you know, I might fold. But or I might just call and see if I turn for take a flyer on one. But if I feel like this guy is just c-betting because that's what you do when you wear the Aria jersey and, you know, jacket, you know, then maybe I outplay him. But right now, I don't dislike this flop. So I'll do one or the other. I mean, I'm probably going to raise because I want to really see what this guy is going to be like to play with for the next couple hours. So I probably will raise and make it, you know, like 50 or something.
I don't think a raise is bad. The reason I like a call, though, is that we haven't really tipped our hand at all here.
Right.
You know, we called on the button, which we could call with a wide variety of hands here. He's making what seems like a standard continuation bet here. And if we call here, we're not giving him any information at all, really. So he's still got a guess now. So let's say, for example, he's playing ace-king here, which is well within the range here, right?
Right.
We have that beat right now. And so when we just call, he doesn't know now whether, as we've kind of eliminated a four or a tray from his range, right? He can't eliminate that from ours, or sets for that matter at that point. So I like to keep him guessing here. I probably intend to come alive on the turn, depending on what comes. But I think right now I'm gonna take one more card off the deck here and make him guess what I have. And you're right, if that five comes, then I'm going to feel a lot better about this. Obviously, the deuce would be fantastic as well, too. Ace, it's going to be really hard for us to play, I think. But we'll just see what happens. But at this point, I want to keep him guessing. He's kept us guessing the entire time he's at the table, too, right?
So, yeah.
Let's not give him any more information than he's giving us.
Let me ask you one question. What information are we giving him by raising?
Well, I think raising now, we are signaling that either we have a hand or we don't think he has a hand. So if he re-raises us, I guess the good part of that is we get out cheap because we're not going to call a re-raise, right?
Right.
If he just calls that raise, then we've taken control of the hand, and then we have to figure out what to do afterwards. And I think that puts us in a tough spot if we don't improve. It's probably not a drastic – I mean, it's not like we're turning our hand over, but – if we don't bet, if we just call, I think we're giving almost no information.
Hmm.
I think there's a thin line, I guess it is.
Yeah, I still don't think you told me what information we're giving him. You sort of told me all these other things, but you didn't really tell him what information we were giving him.
Well, we're signaling to him that we've got him beat. Now, we may have him beat. I'm not confident of that, and anyway, I'm not confident that we can fade two more cards with our deuces.
That's what I mean. Wouldn't you want him to fold? You're telling him you haven't beat, and you're getting in the fold with deuces.
But we're not convinced that he's not ahead of us right now. He very well could be ahead of us right now.
Wouldn't you like to find that out? I mean, for me, if I raise a nominal amount and then he folds, I won with deuces and didn't give him a chance to spike an ace or a king on
very
the turn.
Very true. But our goal going in, even Vic said this, is set mining, right? So
true.
We still have an opportunity to continue to set mine, so... we can still raise on the turn and have the same effect if we decide we want to do that.
Yeah, I guess you're floating him then. Okay. All right, well, a float would work for me too in my mind.
Because the problem is once we come alive here, now we've got to play this hand out, I think, right? So, and we get a very vulnerable hand right now, so I'd rather not have to start playing now if I don't have to when we still have the element of surprise. So, you know. If we call here, we get an easy turn card to hit our set or that
pick up that draw. Yeah.
If we raise, we could get bet off of this. Maybe that raise is good, as I mentioned. I mean, if we're up against aces or kings right now, it probably is smart for us to get out of this pot. But our goal was to set mine, so we've got an opportunity to take one more card towards that mining. So I guess that's where I'm at.
All right.
All right, here it says this looks like a value bet, but it also looks like a C bet. The $21 open from Under the Gun was a bit larger than the established table norm. A $21 bet might be indicative of a big ace or a middle pair type of hand. We decide to call and see what he does on the turn. Wow, I actually thought he was going to raise there like you did.
Yeah. All right, we call.
Vic's got his guessing. With $90 in the pot, we see the turn is the queen of clubs. So our board now is four of diamonds, tray of clubs, ten of hearts, queen of clubs. And he says without hesitation, the villain bets $35.
See, this is what I was afraid of. I mean, the without hesitation thing a lot of times means that they're doing it on autopilot because they think they have to win the hand. So they're doing it quickly to kind of intimidate you. So we could still very well be ahead. But at the same time, I could have just hit his ace-queen, and now we're dead to two outs. So I don't know. I don't want to be in that place. And now the guy bet 35. So now I've invested basically $90 in a hand if I call in pocket deuces. So let's see. It's 42, so 77. So $77. Is that what it is? Yeah. We call the raise to 21. Then we call the bet at 20, so that's 42, and now you bet 35. Yeah, so 77. So for a call here, you're going to be putting $77 into a pot that you have deuces. And it's if you're going to float the guy and hope he checks the river and bet, that's the only reason I would do it now, because I can't be confident on my head. First of all, he could have any pair before any pair beats us. Right. Second of all, he could have now turned it, and that's why he bet it so quick. He finally saw it, so, oh. You know, I bet and automatically puts money out there because he's beating our tens that we were sort of calling with. Because what other hands are we calling with, you know? So unless we intend to float again, you know, because this was supposed to be our float, but the guy bet into us, so, you know, we don't have that confidence that he's weak and only C-bet, I'm letting it go. If we think that he's not, you know, going to make three bets in a row like Stu Unger, then I might call and then take it down on the turn on the river. But it's tough because even another scare card come on the river and then you'll actually hit his hand. So you're still giving him his price to hit his card if he's not already made a hand. I just don't like not being aggressive here. The whole point of playing the button other than set mining is to try to control his hand, which I think we could have done last street. So I think I'm going to fold. I know we're probably ahead and I'm going to lose, but we're going to win. But I would probably fold now.
Well, I wouldn't say we're probably ahead. I think there's a chance we're ahead. But, yeah, the queen was not a card we were hoping to see there because he very well could be playing his hand with ace-queen and now caught up to us. This is why I don't play cash because I haven't really figured out the nuances more than tournaments because tournaments make their decisions a little bit easier, I think. I mean, part of me really thinks we're still set mining here, and he's giving us the right price. I mean, this is a third of the pot bet. And we started with 500. So, you know, part of me wants to put this other 35 in and either hope I hit my deuce or that he is still on air with ace-king and we can win with some showdown value in the end. I know some of that's wishful thinking. The problem with the... I mean, I did say on the last street that I was taking that peeling that card off and then maybe coming alive. So I think there's an argument to me to raise now and say we have something. This queen doesn't scare us. The without hesitation part could be both that the queen got there for him or it could be that we checked and he thinks we're weak, which is exactly what I hoped he would say. Right. So I don't really know what that hesitation means. It could mean two things. So. And then, of course, we're sitting on deuces here against an under-the-gun player that we haven't played against, so there's a pretty strong argument for, hey, we took two shots, we didn't get there, let's get out of this and not waste any more money. So yeah. I think it'd be 30, it's 33, 33, 33, it's just a matter of what that extra one is right now, the percentages for me. Again, I'm a little bit more passive in cash games than I should be, so... if you're going to make me choose, I would choose call here and reassess on the river. But I think you can make an argument for the other two pretty easily. So,
well, here's the deal. I think you have to eliminate that set mining argument from your discussion with us because he's only got one card to come.
Yeah, but it's not just a set mining.
It's two outs.
Now it's an ability to win with our single pair, which is still a possibility in my mind. So it's,
no, I agree. I'm just saying.
We're hoping for a deuce.
Yeah, we're not saying he's giving us the right odds to call to hit a set on the end because that's not what's happening here. There's no way it's the right odds. It's 11-1 on or whatever it is. It's got 48 unknown cards. What is it? No, it's 8 cards known. So 44 cards unknown. There's two in the deck, so you got one in 22 shot of hitting it. There's no way that 3-to-1 odds is gonna not even 2-to-1 odds because he bet 35. There's no way you have the right odds to call here to try to hit your set. So it's all the other factors. Because even if you hit your set now, implied odds are that you're still not enough because he's not gonna now shove on whatever river card comes if you happen to make a deuce. This is not gonna happen. So I would be playing the player. So if I'm gonna do that, there's no way I call. It's either raise or fold for me. The call I think is a bad move. But all right, let's see what happens.
All right, our hero says a raise here could end it if we believe that the villain is just continuing the betting lead in the hand with air. Only hands with two Broadway cards have picked up outs, and we're still ahead of those. The queen didn't seem to scare him, but he bet just over half the pot on the flop and only just a third pot on the turn. Does he have a hand like ace-10? Would he open with that? I think we can profitably call here. Depending on the river and his action, we can either take it away with a smart bet or raise or check it down. We call the 35. Wow. Dick is confusing me on both streets now.
Hate that.
All right, well, I said I was going to do it, so we'll see what happens here. Mm-hmm. With 160 in the pot, the river is the four of hearts. The final board is four of diamonds, tray of clubs, ten of hearts, queen of clubs, four hearts. Of course, pairing the board. Villain pauses for a moment this time before cutting out a $65 bet and sliding it forward.
I mean, we have nothing to go on here. As this guy's giving us no indication that we're ahead. He raised preflop. He bet every street. He didn't hesitate. Yep. He's not afraid to put out. He put out a ton of money on this hand. You know, 60, then 21, and 35. And so, I mean, he's literally bet 40, 70, and he's bet over $130 on this hand. He's given us no indication to make a hero call here. You've just joined him. It's not like you've played with this guy forever. The only way you make a call here or a raise is if, you know, you're crazy. You've picked up on something that you're not telling us about, or you're lying. It's one of those three things, right?
Sounds like a movie.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, there's no way that you can call here. You can raise because you don't know this guy. If you knew this guy forever and you're like, this is what he does. He three barrels. Every time he's under the gun, he's got ace-king. He does this. He doesn't slow down. He bets automatically on the turn because he wants to keep you from floating. You know, you got all this history with the guy. That's one thing. The guy just joins the table and he's done nothing except play ABC poker in front of you and play it strongly. There's no way you can make a read on that now and call with deuces. So you have to fold. If you call and you're right, I mean, you have there's no rhyme or reason to it. He could have had ace-10. He could have had pocket tens. He could have had pocket jacks. He could have had pocket kings. He could have had pocket aces. He could have had ace-queen. He could have had ace-10. He could have had 8-8 and you're still beat. There's no hand that you beat other than a pure bluff on every single street with a brand new player. Any call here is just bravado and wasting money. And even if you hit it and you're right, that's a losing play down in the long run. So I can't imagine. If you want to raise because you want to try to figure this guy out, now he's bet 60, you said?
65.
So you're going to make a legitimate raise is like now it's going to be almost 200. You started with 500, you make it 200 to go on deuces, and you've put in 35, 21, like I said, I keep losing track, 77 before that. Now it's like, wow, I'm going to bet $277 on deuces because I want to try to beat this one guy that I don't even know how he plays yet? How about, you know, let it go? That's what I would think. I just can't see any...
How about let it go?
I can't see any hand here that we beat other than a bluff, and so I can't call. So then I'd have to raise, and I said, you know, this guy's got a huge hand. We're just wasting money. You have to fold here.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. I think we had tough spots after the flop. So, I can run through the scenarios here. One, it's still possible that he has something like ace-king, ace-jack, and we're ahead, and is just, you know, continuing the pressure, hoping that we go away, because we haven't shown that we're excited about the hand, right? So... there weren't a lot of draws there, other than the straight draw, that made a lot of sense. So, he has to wonder what we have here. So that makes it a little more difficult to believe that he's still betting with nothing. The pairing of the four doesn't really help too much, I don't think. So, it seems to me reckless to raise here just because, as you mentioned, we haven't given him much information, but he hasn't given us much either. And he very well could have lots of hands to have us beat, right? And it's going to call. So, It's difficult to come this far and give up on the river when it's possible that we have the right winning hand. So I don't know. I mean, I think at this point I'm going to call and I'm going to regret putting this much money in the pot. But the one thing I think is interesting is that if I can get in Vic's head, and I haven't read ahead, so I could be way off base on that. But he didn't mention how he wanted to really play against this guy, right? And that he thinks that this guy likes to intimidate with his tricks jacket and stone cold silent treatment. Generally, those players, if he has the right read, are the type that would more likely bluff with air three times. So part of me, I mean, I'm trying to talk myself, probably talking myself into a call here for weird reasons, but that's what makes me think that maybe I just need to call here. My deuces actually might be good. And if they are, then we own this player the rest of the night. He's just going to be on tilt, right? So at this point, you know, I can't raise. I feel weak folding. I think I'm going to risk the 65 to win a pot that I shouldn't have and put this guy on tilt, knowing full well that the chances of us losing this pot are even higher.
Yeah, I just if here's how I want to leave it as. You and I used to travel a lot for poker. If you and I walked into, say, Green Valley Ranch in Las Vegas, or near Las Vegas, and we sit down and we're like, okay, there's no Omaha, there's no Stud 8, there's nothing that we really want to play, but we want to play, so we're going to play No Limit Hold'em. And you and I sit down at a 1-3 table, and brand new player at the table that we've never met before is there, shows up, he's under the gun, he makes a hefty raise, which was 7x.
Right.
You look down at the button and have pocket deuces. First of all, you're not even calling, probably. You're probably folding. But now you've called, and it's shooing him, and the guy bets the flop. The guy bets the turn. The guy bets the river. I don't see you calling. I think if you and I just – we erased all the information you just had and all the Vic G moments, and you just say – Chris, you went to a tournament today, or you went into not a tournament, it has to be a cash game. So you're at a cash game. Guy sits down that you've never played before in your life. He's got a jacket on, and he does card tricks or chip tricks, and he bets every street, including under the gun, and he bets everything strong the whole way, and he's not afraid of anything. Are you calling $65 on the end when there's, you know, you have deuces? I just don't think you call. I think you gotten out earlier in this, but.
You're right. Absolutely, yeah.
Right? So there's no reason to call.
I think the better play now that we've seen this hand play out would to be to raise the turn and represent we had that queen and find out where he was. So, and I was 33 on that, and yeah. That's makes more sense now that I've seen the river and the spot that we're in.
The guy bets again on the river. He doesn't care. It's like, okay, so now I'm trying to catch a bluff by betting 65, which you take the money out of it. I mean, that's, you know, that's a decent hunk no matter how much he's got in front of him. In a 1-3 game, and it's like it's 65 to win one, I don't know, 70. So I don't know. I don't think there's – it's either a bluff catcher or not. I mean, I don't think you're winning with deuces there. I think you need to raise or fold. I don't think you're winning with deuces. He may have won. The guy might have ace-king or ace-jack, but that's a huge assumption to make on a player you know nothing about. You know, he might be the type of guy that only raised under the gun with aces or kings, and nothing's fazed him. And you're going to make this call on what information? There's no information other than the guy just kept betting.
You can make that argument, too, that we've come this far, so that $65 is information because he's going to have to show his hand before we do, too. So there is that.
He seems like he has no problem doing that. You know, so now I've wasted $100-something on a pot to see get information from a guy. We now only have 500 start.
We didn't waste all of it to get information. We thought we had a legitimate chance of winning up until now.
Mm.
And there still is a chance. So
yeah.
I would say if we're going to say we're wasting money to get information, it's wasting the $65 that we're putting in on the river here that we don't have to.
Yeah.
The rest of it, I think, we invested in this hand for other reasons.
Yeah. I also think you could have folded pre-flop and gotten that information from the guy later. Absolutely. You know,
but
yeah.
Here we are.
Yeah. But we are. So I still think I either raise or fold, and I'm getting out. The guy, in reality, this guy, I have no information on this guy other than a jacket. I don't know where he got the jacket from. How do I know it's the only jacket he owns and it's cold? I mean, how do I know where he got the jacket from? You know, the guy does chip tricks. Who doesn't? Everybody fools around with their chips. So to me, that's not enough information for me to risk 65 on the river you know, because I think he's just trying to push me off the hand, you know. It'd be one thing if you did the Hollywood crap and slammed the chips and all that. He's wearing a jacket and rough on his chips.
Oh, man.
I'm folding. But see, right. I know he's not going to fold because it's not hand of the week if he folds.
Well, sometimes he could. We'll find out. All right, you're folding, I'm calling. Let's see what Vic says, which means he's going to raise.
That's right.
All right, our hero says, what's he got? We can rule out over pairs. He might have a set of tens or a pair of jacks, maybe. I think we can rule out lower pairs in any hand with a four. After all, he played a few hands and opened this for $21 from under the gun. He could have stumbled upon the queen on the turn with a hand like ace-queen, but why only bet 35 then? For a while, I considered representing the four, but he's only going to to fold all of his bluffs, call or raise with his big hands, and possibly make a hero call with a hand like jacks. After a long time, we make the $65 call. Wow, I'm playing Vic G poker tonight.
Before we move on, can you explain to me how Vic G eliminates big pairs and over pairs? The guy raises early in that position, which is what you would do with a big pair, comes all unders, you would bet with a big pair. If it's an over pair to the queen, they wouldn't phase you, you'd bet automatically. Especially if you have aces. There's nothing going to stop you from betting the turn if you have aces. And then he bets the river. He's value betting the whole way. There's still no draw out there legitimately other than Jack 10. You know, I mean, Jack King, which did you really call my raise and call my flop bet with Jack King? No.
Right.
So I don't understand how he rules those out because I think he wants to be right on this. But I don't think that's the way you do it. You can't rule out an overpair here. That's exactly how an overpair would play this hand.
I will say it's difficult because he made a little bit more than a half-size bet on the flop, which is consistent with that. And then he dialed back the bets to kind of keep us in, right?
And that's what you do anyway. You don't keep betting half. The pot's getting bigger and bigger. It's called pot control.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, partner.
All right, so you can't rule out those hands. I think he's doing it to justify his call, but I don't think that's the way you do it. I don't know, he's going to give me a lot of crap for this, I think.
All right, big reveal. Boy, I've never been more excited about a reveal ever.
Quarantine is really hitting us hard. Hand of the week gets us excited.
All right, our villain announces ace high, and we table our pocket deuces. I kick myself for not exercising patience and allowing him to table or muck his hand first. No, come on, Vic. We need to know what he had there.
He said ace high. What else could it be?
Vic is always the one that says, hey, I'm going to let him show first.
I know. What else could it be?
Make that mistake, Mick. Oh. You go back to Beau Rivage when it opens up and you find that guy and find out what he had this hand. He says he stares at my deuces in disbelief and mucks as I rake in the $290 pot. Now he's talking. How could you call? What was I giving off? I'm an old guy, so you have to put me on a hand. I've never seen a play like that in all my years of playing poker. On and on for 15 minutes, no kidding. He was sincere with his compliments, and I thanked him. I joked with him and saying that I never trust a bald guy, removing my hat to show him I'm bald too. Then saying that those Aria players always bluff, and finally getting under skin by saying that I'll tell him what he gave up after I'm done playing. I really felt good about this call. Really, it was worth the $65 just to see what he's playing, since this was an uncapped room, and I would surely play with him again this week. He was so flabbergasted, his serious poker pro facade was gone, and he tilted off the rest of his stack a couple more rebuys before I left the table. Exactly what I said.
That's true.
For one hand of my life, I was on Vic G level.
Good for you.
I'm laughing loud, but I do think that was in the heat of the moment. Those were some of the considerations I would have made. I would have made the call. So, not trying to say I'm a savant here. I really expected us to lose that pop. But
no one
pop to see his hand. And the weird thing is, we won the hand but didn't see the pot. I don't know how that happens. But
he had to have ace high though. There's no other hand that he's playing that way.
Well, he did say ace high. Yeah. It doesn't matter what. So I mean,
Ace King
or ace jack are really the only things I can think of, because then after that, ace queen has a pair and ace 10 has a pair, so then you're down to ace 9 and you're not making that kind of raise with anything that's ace 10. So had to be ace king or ace jack. Wow. So
I'll have to give it to him. I still couldn't rule out the over pair, but if you thought $65 was a good investment to see how the guy plays, then I don't fault the call.
See, he can't say that now because he tabled his hand first. So
yeah.
Really was saying on $65 to invest in information, which is what I was saying. He would have kept those cards.
He would have said, show me the ace high.
Yep.
But all right, Vic, you got this one. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.